We're in the Fred Hollows Reserve, which is a really important little bit of native bushland remnant in Coogee. And it's got some really interesting native species, but it's also absolutely overrun by weeds. There's morning glory everywhere and tradescantia and just all sorts of things growing amongst the blueberry ash and the tree ferns and the other nice native things.
To my eye, it all looks beautiful. It's quite a crisp morning. The sun's out, there's clear blue sky, and there's dew everywhere. There's just a lot of moisture in this little gully. But everything, all of the plants look quite beautiful in this setting. But you were saying that there's weeds. So, I mean, looking in front of us here, this massive greenery, can you point out some of the weeds?
Yeah, I can see lantana, I can see morning glory, I can see a peace lily, I can see a big privet. There's all sorts of stuff. But you know what? Several of the weeds are kind of pretty because they were introduced for people's gardens. So
this peace lily, I mean,
yeah, that's almost certainly been thrown over someone's back fence from their garden. That's how a lot of weeds get into these urban bushland remnants. And another thing that really shapes the type of plant you have is the nutrient enrichment that we have. So all of the runoff from fertilisers and things, that really disadvantages the native plants and really helps the introduced species get established. So the natives might be struggling because the nutrients have been added to, because it hasn't burnt here for a really long time and they were kind of expecting it to. You know, sometimes the weeds are just a symptom of the other changes, and you can't tell whether it's the weeds causing the problem or the other things that humans have done to the ecosystem.
Hi, I'm Joel Werner, and this is Off Track on RN. Associate Professor Angela Moles is an ecologist from the School of Biological, Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of New South Wales, and she wants us to reconsider the weed. This morning, we're in a bushland gully in Sydney's eastern suburbs, but I first met Angela in a very different setting.
I first became aware of your research at the Eureka Awards last year when you won the Outstanding Young Researcher Award. I think more outstanding than the science you were doing was that you'd had a baby a week beforehand. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it was an interesting time. I just decided to go along to the dinner, you know, just to see it because I didn't think I'd get to go back to a Eureka Awards. I was absolutely shocked when I won. And yeah, then I had to walk up onto the stage in heels, like carrying my baby. I was terrified I was going to faceplant because I'm not very good on heels. But it was an amazing night. And yeah.
A great memory for her when she's one of her first experiences with the general public was on an awards ceremony. Ceremony stage in the Horden Pavilion.
That's true. I'm afraid I flew her to England the following week for a conference. So, she's been around.
And 8 months later, is she going well?
She's going great. Yeah, she's fat, happy, and trying to kill me at night through sleep deprivation.
Tell us about the research that you won the award for. It was looking at the evolution of different ecosystems.
That's right, yeah. I study global patterns in how plants grow and reproduce, so things about how seed size has been shaped around the planet, how plant height, how plants defend themselves against the animals that try to eat them, all that sort of stuff, and also thinking about the selective forces that go into shaping those patterns that we see.
So, I mean, coming from Australia, we're used to plants that have adapted to be shorter and have a smaller leaf area, so it stops water being lost to the hot atmosphere. Is this right, or is this just a common misperception?
Well, it depends where in Australia you are. I mean, Australia is just an amazing country for all the different ecosystems. It's really got everything except mountains. You've got the deserts, you've got the rainforests up north, you've got the coastal ecosystems, you know, the beautiful shrublands around Sydney and other cities. Yeah, it's stunning, and there's different selective processes acting at different strengths in each different place. So, yeah, a really wide range of strategies here.
So did you find that in the tropics that trees were taller and that seeds were bigger?
Yeah, obviously there's a big range in the different types of strategies that plants are using in any one place. But yeah, on average in the tropics, they were something like 30 times taller than they are, say, 60 degrees north or south. So really big differences in the size of these organisms. Like, it might sound obvious, oh, how tall are the trees, you know, but we actually knew nothing about the global patterns in even such an obvious trait as that. And the importance of that is, if we're going to try and understand what's going to happen to our ecosystems under climate change, then understanding something about the present-day patterns in how these things respond to different temperatures and rainfalls and things, that's really important baseline information for us to work from.
It sounds really obvious science, but I was thinking about it last night, and how do you go about measuring the height of trees? It's a simple problem, but once you start to think about how you do it, it becomes amazingly complex.
It is, actually. What I do is I stand on the shoulders of all the ecologists who've gone before. So basically there's ecologists in any one ecosystem, you know, measuring this one species here and this one species here. And what I've done in a lot of my work is gone to the literature and compiled those different bits of information that different researchers have gathered and put it together. In the case of plant height, I have data for over 30,000 species, and yeah, believe me, I'd still be measuring if I was out there with my tape measure.
You're speaking at the TEDx conference on Saturday, and you're talking about weeds, but I guess your approach to weeds reminds me of a show we did on Off Track earlier in the year where we're looking at foxes, an introduced species, and whether over time, given enough time, the fox, an introduced species, could, through its interactions with the ecosystem, actually start to become defined as a native species. Similar concept with weeds?
Yes, definitely. That was a really cool show. I focus probably more on the evolution than the researchers you had on that show. So what I'm thinking of is the selective processes that are acting. So you've got these introduced species that have been brought to a new country. They're facing, you know, completely different conditions here, different things to eat, different things chasing them around, different environmental conditions, and that's going to shape their evolution. And so what I'm suggesting is we're seeing these evolutionary changes, and if we go far enough into the future, they will have actually become selected to suit the Australian environment, and they'll eventually become different to, say, the foxes or the weeds that are in other parts of the world.
White settlement in Australia has provided scientists with this opportunity, a control group, if you will, for introduced species.
Yeah, so back 100 and some years ago, we actually thought introducing species was a really good idea, and we had acclimatisation societies that, if you look at the pictures, they tend to be white men with these amazing whiskers. And these guys were working really hard on bringing in as many weird and wonderful exotic species as they could. And these guys, plus, you know, all the species that have been brought in for farming or for gardens or just by accident on people's socks, you know, they've set up this amazing replicated experiment for studying evolution. So we've brought them to a new country, and they're now experiencing the Australian conditions. And we've done some research that's shown that these things are changing through time. They've undergone some really substantial changes in form since they were introduced.
So this is over 150 years. I think when a lot of people think about evolution, they think about it on a much longer time scale. But what sort of changes have you observed in a couple of centuries?
Well, that's exactly it. We went to the Botanic Gardens, or my master's student Joanna Buswell went in, and they went, no, you know, this is a ridiculous project. You shouldn't be allowed to do it because, you know, they've only been here 100 and some years. Of course they won't have changed. But she went ahead and she measured the shape of over 23 species in Australia and another 20 or so in New Zealand, and she found that over 70% of the introduced species in Australia had undergone significant changes. And they weren't just statistically significant things, they were substantial morphological changes. So, for instance, there was a clover that has changed its height, decreased in height, by 60% per 100 years since it's been here. We've got black medic, which has halved its leaf size over the last 100 years. Dove's foot geranium and bird's foot trefoil, they've substantially changed their leaf size, so their leaves are now rounder in the Australian environment. So there's no doubt about it, these species have adapted to life in Australia.
Is it like the introduced species are playing catch-up to the natives? So the natives have had such a long time to adapt to the selective pressures of the local environment that the introduced species, if they want to survive, just have to adapt more quickly?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm from New Zealand, and in New Zealand we kind of think of our native species as these sort of pathetic, funny things that get overtaken when they get introduced to the superior plants and animals from Europe. And that's rubbish, you know. The species that grow here or in New Zealand or anywhere in the world have had hundreds or thousands of generations of selection that makes them really good at living where they do. And it's actually amazing to me that you can bring in a species from elsewhere in the world and have it compete.
So you're talking about the evolution of introduced species, but how do you know this is evolution in genetic terms? Couldn't it just be a physical expression of the genes?
Yeah, it could be. So obviously where an organism is growing really matters. To make 100% sure that it's genetic change, we're actually doing experiments in the glasshouses at the University of New South Wales at the moment. And at the end of those, we'll be breeding our lines to see if there is any reproductive isolation coming about, if they're starting to be a separate species already. The other thing we did was we thought about the environment. So these measurements that we took were on species that are growing in the same place through time. So it's not that the place has changed. They're still growing here in New South Wales, and we controlled for the different areas in New South Wales that they're growing. And we also measured the native species. And if there was a big change in the environment over the last 100 years, and obviously there have been some changes, like in carbon dioxide, temperature and things, if that was what was driving it, then you'd expect to see the native species changing too. And there were a couple of little changes in the native species, but they weren't changing anything like as often or as much as the introduced species. So it really looks like it's due to being in a new environment.
Getting back to weeds, I'm often put on the spot when I go bushwalking with my wife, because I'll point out what looks like a healthy, luscious, beautiful plant, and she'll let me know it's a weed. And admittedly, she's a lot better versed in ecology than I am, but what is a weed, and why is it thought of as a weed?
Yeah, well, a weed is really a plant that's growing anywhere that's out of place. But I think we've been really black and white on our thinking about this. We think introduced species, bad. You know, we're like a bunch of Daleks. We go introduce, exterminate. You know, that's all we can think. And we think native, always good. But that's not always the case. Not all of the introduced species are actually problem invaders, and not all of the native species are always 100% good for everything. So there's a bit of a movement underfoot to start trying to assess species just on their merits rather than on where they come from.
Angela, with two young children, how will you educate them to see the world in terms of ecology and observing ecosystems?
Well, they're probably going to get a lot more information about this than they want. I'll probably tell them when things have been in Australia for a long time versus when they've been introduced. But I don't think I'd be selling it with as much of a, you know, introduced species are evil sort of a sales pitch as they might get from other ecologists. Basically, I do think you should assess species on their merits. And actually, a lot of the introduced species, aside from being fascinating cases of evolution, they're often introduced for horticulture and things. So a lot of the weeds that are around, if we actually take off the blinkers of, oh, they're introduced, they must be nasty, they're actually really pretty things. A lot of people would have trouble with the idea that we'll ever accept introduced species as being Australian. But a little thought experiment, say my son Sam, he's a second generation Australian, he's born here, he speaks with an Australian accent, everyone would say, yeah, he's Australian, we'd be pretty happy with that. But if you take a clover, for instance, that's been here for, say, 130 years, it grows with an Australian accent, 60% shorter than when it got here, it's become part of the ecosystem, there's native animals eating it and a native species existing with it, but we would go, nah, that can't be a native. It was introduced. We're never going to consider it native. But then think about the dingo that was brought in, what, 4,000 or 5,000 years ago by humans, and as long as they're a purebred, we're now pretty happy to say, yeah, that's an Australian taxon. So really, like the process of speciation itself, I think our acceptance of introduced species as Australians is just a matter of time.
Associate Professor Angela Moles challenging us to reconsider the weed. If you'd like to find out more about Angela's work, follow the links on the Off Track website. Just head to abc.net.au/radionational and search for Off Track, the native fox in RN's National Park. I'm Joel Werner.